So, it's 8 o'clock, time for the second morning talk of this retreat. And as continuing on about the meditation practice and how we can slowly but firmly establish the foundations of our meditation, establishing mindfulness as a priority, and in other words, that's our first goal, and all the different ways of establishing that mindfulness. And last night I was mentioning the Emperor's Three Questions, meditation. Now is the most important time. In meditation, whatever's in front of you right now is the most important meditation object in the whole world, and the only thing to do is to care for it, to allow it to be, and to respect it. So no matter what is happening, you just respect this. And sometimes when people keep complaining, or they have a restless mind, it wanders all over the place. Now first of all, some people call that the monkey mind. But that is not the monkey mind. I will now tell you the story, the real true story, about the monkey mind. A long time ago, in Sri Lanka, on a Vaisak day, there was a big celebration in the temple. And of course, as you all know, whenever there's a big celebration in a monastery, a nun's monastery, monk's monastery, there's always lots and lots and lots of food. And so the monkey went to the monastery not to celebrate Vaisak, but to try his luck that somebody might drop a mango or they may leave a banana on the table and he may be able to get a nice juicy mango. So he went there just waiting to see if he could find something to eat. And that is when he just happened to be passing the Dhamma hall and he heard the monk give a lecture. And it was a lecture on meditation, and he heard the monk talk about monkey mind. And he thought, wow, that's interesting, they're talking about me. So he listened intently, and what he heard shocked him. He was so angry, because the monk was saying a monkey mind is a bad mind. If you've got a monkey mind, you're going to have a lot of trouble with your meditation. You should somehow suppress or find some means of letting go and overcoming and surpassing the monkey mind. It's a bad mind. And the monkey thought, what's wrong with a monkey mind? You can't say a monkey mind is bad. I've got one. I was born with one. What's wrong with a monkey mind? This is not right. You can't do this in today's world. I always thought the monks and nuns were very sensitive to, you know, the social harmony. And we can't go around sort of being politically incorrect and just saying wrong things about this gender or that sort of sexual orientation or even species differences. Saying a monkey mind is a bad mind is just not on in today's world. I'm going to complain. This needs to be conferred to the World Health Organization or Human Rights Organization or something, because this is defamatory. This is not right. That was not bad, actually, was it? I just managed to go. All right. So the monkey was very upset and he swung back to his troop in the middle of the jungle. He said, you wouldn't believe what these monks are talking about us. They were saying we've got monkey minds, which is fair enough, but they were saying monkey minds are bad minds. And all the other monks said, they can't say that. And they were jumping up and down. This is wrong. This is terrible. We should do something about this. We shouldn't just allow this to happen in today's world. And that the elder monkey, very old monkey, he said, now look, what are you all doing? Jumping up and down like that. That's called the monkey mind. And all the monkeys thought, oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, we've all got monkey minds, and I suppose they are bad minds. And they said, what can we do about this? And the head monkey said, well look, I've been to that temple as well, and I've listened to those monks giving the teachings, and I've heard that the way to overcome the monkey mind is to meditate. And so they're like, yeah, let's meditate. And they were jumping up and down, yeah, we want to meditate. Come on, let's meditate. And after about 5 minutes of jumping up and down, someone said, well, actually, how do you meditate? Not by jumping up and down. So the head monk said, well, you know, I'm not sure, but this is how I've seen other people meditate. You go and get a nice zafu, a nice cushion. Yeah, let's get a nice cushion. So they went up and down. Yeah, we want to get a cushion. Where do you get a cushion from? And they said, from the forest, get some leaves and grass. And so they all went into the forest, got some leaves and grass, made nice little zafus for themselves. Now what do we do? Sit on them. So they sat on them. Now what? Now, said the head monk, put your right leg over the left leg, your right paw over the left paw, with your fingers touching, your back straight, and your head down, and close your eyes, and now watch your breath. And that was the first time ever in the jungle so many monkeys meditated at the same time. And it was quiet, silent, for about 30 seconds. Excuse me, said one of the monkeys. I've been thinking. You know, for lunch, we planned, because all the people at the temple, we planned to go to the banana plantation, because, you know, it's not guarded, everyone's at the temple, and raid the banana plantation for lunch. And I just can't get it out of my head. And the other one said, yeah, same with me, yeah, I've been thinking about the banana plantation. So I said, let's go to the banana plantation. It's not time for lunch yet, but we'll go to the banana plantation, get as many bananas as we can and bring them to the clearing here. And we won't eat them yet. It's just, you know, getting things ready. So yeah, great idea. So they all got up from their zafus, went to the banana plantation, stole as many bananas as they could handle and put them all in a big pile in the middle of the jungle in their little area. And once they did that, they got it out of the way. And they went back to their little zafus. The right leg over the left leg, the right paw over the left paw, thumb slightly touching, back straight, chin down, close the eyes, and started meditating on their breath. Breathing in, breathing out, breathing. Excuse me, said another of the monkeys. I've been thinking. You know, before we eat those bananas, we've got to prepare them first, we've got to peel them. Let's peel them. We won't eat them yet. It's not lunchtime yet. We'll just peel them, get that out of the way, and then we can meditate. Yeah, good idea, said all the other monkeys. So they got up from their seats. They peeled all the bananas, left them in a big pile in the middle. They didn't eat them yet. Not lunchtime. And then they went back to their cushions. Right leg over the left leg, right paw over the left paw. Just settling into the meditation position. Close their eyes. Breathing in, breathing out. Excuse me, said another monkey. You know, I've been thinking. Before we actually eat those bananas, we've got to put them in our mouth first of all. So let's just put them in our mouth. We won't eat them yet, we'll just put them in our mouth. Yeah, good idea. I've been thinking the same. Yeah, me too, said the other monkeys. So they all got up and they took a banana each, and of course, you know, it's nature, primate nature, includes us. A couple of monkeys put two in their mouth. There's always one to put three in their mouth, a very fat monkey. And then they sat down with the bananas in their mouth. Right leg over the left leg, right paw over the left paw, thumbs slightly touching, back straight, eyes closed. And as soon as everybody had their eyes closed, and all those bananas disappeared. And then they got up and did whatever else monkeys waste time on. And that is what's called the monkey mind. Let's get this out of the way first, and then I'll meditate. So that's what we really call the monkey mind. Not thinking about this, thinking about that, but getting things out of the way. another thing out of the way, and another thing out of the way. There's no end of things to get out of the way when you put meditation low down on the priority list. I think I did already tell you, I think the first night, about the big stones in the jar. Didn't. Oh, I've been telling everybody else that. Okay. There was a professor at a business school, and he came to his class one morning, and without saying a word, they didn't know exactly what he was going to teach them this morning, but he got a big jar and put it on his desk. And without saying anything, he reached into his briefcase and pulled out a bag of stones, of rocks. And he put the rocks into the jar, one after the other, until he could get no more rocks in the jar. And then he looked up at his class and asked a simple question: is the jar full? To which they said, yes, sir, it's full. Can't get any more rocks in. And without any comment, he smiled, reached into his briefcase and had a bag of gravel, smaller stones. And he could put the gravel into the jar, shake it, and much of those smaller stones found a place between the rocks. And when he could get no more gravel in, he asked his class another time, is the jar full now? And they, being very clever little students, say, nope, I'm sure you'll find something else to put in there. And he smiled silently and reached into his bag and had in his briefcase and pulled out a bag of sand. And he put the sand in the top, shook it, and much of the sand managed to find a space between the gravel and the rocks. And once he could get no more sand in, another time he asked, is the jar full now? And they all shook their head. We're on to you now, sir. You'll probably find some other thing you can put in there. And he smiled and took his bottle of water and poured water into that jar. And that too found spaces between the sand, the gravel and the rocks. And after filling the jar as much as he could with the water, he then looked up at the class and said, what is the meaning of this little demonstration? What do you take home from this? And one of the students, being a business school, said, sir, it proves to us no matter how busy we are, we can always fit something else in. He said, no, that's not the message at all. The message is, if you want to put the big rocks in, the precious stones, you have to put them in first. Other stuff you can fit in later on. Some priorities. Finding bananas, peeling them, putting in your mouth, you can fit that in later on. But now's the time to actually to learn how to meditate. And to learn how to meditate, it means that we give it priority. Number one, you've got so many other things you have to deal with in life, so many decisions you have to make, family, finances, monks, nuns I've got to look after, Buddhist Society of Western Australia, and all this other stuff, but I can fit that in later. Now's the time to fit meditation in, first of all. So, and especially, make mindfulness a priority, because that's one of those phrases in the Satipatthana Sutta, which again, sometimes people translate as establish mindfulness in front of you. In front of me? There's not supposed to be a me in here. So I already mentioned yesterday about trying to prove I exist to the Centrelink officers in Armidale Social Services and finding out I don't exist. Not according to records and ID. So then, that's why I'm not afraid of identity fraud. I haven't got one. So how can you steal an identity I don't have? Interesting, deep question on Dhamma. But anyway, and I don't, if somebody stole it and pretended to be Ajahn Brahm, that'd be great. They can go and give all these talks and retreats and answer all these questions and all these marriages and stuff, and I can just actually go into my cave and disappear. What a wonderful thing identity fraud is. How can we advertise? I mean, you're the secretary, Venerable Kassapa, but can you sort of get someone to please steal my identity?
I think they did on Facebook, didn't they?
Did they?
You have a few accounts on Facebook that we have to sort out.
Oh, really? Yay! My wishes have been fulfilled. I don't know. Anyway, back to where was I? Priorities and mindfulness in front of you. The idea of mindfulness in front of you doesn't make any sense, but the word in front of you, in front, they have this similar words in the English. Priority. Even like the prior is like the head monk in a sort of Christian monastery. The most important, the one in front, don't establish mindfulness in front of you. You know, people say that means in front of your nose over here. What's that about? I don't exist behind my nose. So, you know, sometimes in the West we think we exist in our head. So mindfulness in front of me will be out here somewhere. But there's no breath happening there. In the old days, we used to say the heart was where we live. So mindfulness in front of me will be out here somewhere. That doesn't make any sense at all. In fact, the whole idea of mindfulness in front of one just doesn't make any sense. So instead, we have mindfulness in front, priority. The number one thing we're supposed to do when we start meditating. Get ourselves mindful. So in those Emperor's Three Questions meditation, now's the most important time. The thing in front of you is the most important. Giving things importance, if it's happening now, is part of establishing mindfulness. Whatever you're watching, whatever's in the mind, right in this moment, you close your eyes, what is this right now? I give it importance. I don't think, no, this is not the breath. I've got to get rid of this to go to the breath. I've got to somehow overcome the tiredness so I can go to the nimittas. I can somehow or other just get away from this fantasy or these dreams so I can actually come to what? So instead of trying to get rid of things, we care for them. Instead of curing yourself from defilements, we are here. And a good example of that is when sometimes people say, don't you get tired of travelling, Ajahn Brahm? Going these aircraft for hours. I think in June, when I left here to go to, I think to Chicago, I was actually to see John, ex-Ajahn Chakra, on the way to a global conference. It's only just from Perth to Singapore and Singapore to San Francisco and San Francisco to Chicago. But I decided I'm not going to figure out how many hours of travel that was until the day after I landed. It was 37 hours. According to checking all the time zones. But it wasn't that long. I didn't travel at all. I just sat in the aircraft, and the aircraft did the travelling. I just did the sitting and the sleeping. Different perspective. So, do you ever travel anywhere? People sometimes say, when are you going to be here? I'm always here. Sometimes you're not here, that's the only thing. I'm always here. And sometimes the people around me are American, sometimes they're Singaporean, sometimes they're Korean, because I'm in Korea. But I'm always here. I don't go anywhere. Different perspectives. So having that different perspective when you're having a wandering mind, is the mind really wandering? Or is it you're not catching up with it. You're not here when it wanders. It goes and leaves you behind because you don't want to be there. So instead, whatever's happening right now is most important. Whatever it is, be with it. Give it importance and care for it. How can the mind wander off when you go with it? Wherever it goes, I will be by your side, mind. I'm your friend. That way, there's no more wandering minds. You're always there. Because otherwise, I was taught this. When you watch the breath, right from the very beginning, sit down, close your eyes, watch your breath. Great teachings, the rubbish teachings. Caused me so much misery. Because I tried to watch my breath, and my mind wandered off. Bring it back. Brought it back. Wandered off again. Bring 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 it back. After about 2 or 3 years of that, you think, hey, this can't be right. How many times do you have to bring your mind back? So, if you can't beat them, join them. If the mind wants to wander off, see where it goes. Be its chaperone. That's what mindfulness is. Chaperone the mind. Wherever the mind goes, you go with it. And just understand why. Because if you give it importance, whatever's happening right now, you respect whatever's in front of your mind, it means that you're also learning about my mind, it's going over here, it's going over there, and caring for it. And then after a while, you realize why. Why doesn't my mind want to stay with the breath? It's because, number one, it's been forced to watch the breath for such a long time. And sometimes it's traumatized. Please excuse me for any Thai people here, but in the northeast of Thailand, every morning we had to do this really long morning chanting. And, you know, it was in Thai, and mostly there was the old Thai ladies were doing the chanting, and they were totally out of tune. And every morning after about 9 years of this, I was traumatized. It's post-traumatic stress syndrome. Honestly, every time I hear that, it just brings back bad memories. Because I had to. That's why, you know, I don't like doing chanting. Because I had to. It was too long. Instead of enjoying it, you know, it was just part of the thing you had to do. And it wasn't very pleasant. So they're trying their best, the poor old ladies, but when you're about 70 or 80, chewing betel nut at the same time, you know, you can't do chanting very well. I can't do chanting very well anyway, but anyway, there we go. We were doing the chanting, and so it had its bad memories of it. I like the people doing it. They were really sweet old ladies, fed me. But the chanting was awful. So anyway, that gave me this, every time you hear the chanting in northeast, sometimes. The same with some of the times you force yourself to watch the breathing and the mind has rebelled. It's not watching the breath, it's just being forced to, you forcing yourself. And that is almost like a trauma to you. So you don't want to do that. So instead, when the breath does come, it's the best thing is when the breath comes by itself, it's just here. But if not, at least you can be kind to your breath, which is one of the reasons why you add something to the breath, something nice to the breath. I often add this gratitude to my breath. Over 68 years now, my breath has been coming in and going out, and it hasn't let me down yet. Imagine somebody that reliable. Every few seconds it's bringing oxygen in and taking all the used products, mostly carbon dioxide, out. And it's been doing this continually, night and day, when you're asleep, when you're awake, when you're working, when you're arguing, when you're meditating, when you're with your friends, Whatever you're doing, it does it all the time. 68 years of those breaths. Thank you. And just having a little bit of gratitude, not taking the breath for granted. Say thank you, breath. And then that's a way of, we call it anthropomorphism? No, something. When you give like human qualities to things. When you give human quality towards the breath, and I say, thank you, breath. It's a wonderful thing you've been doing. Then the breath brightens up. It's like becomes soft and nice and easy to watch. I don't force myself onto the breath. I just become a friend to my breath. And when you're a friend to your breath and you give it attention, you care for it, of course it becomes so easy to watch. I think I might have already mentioned that my breath and I are best of friends. So much that often because I have to give talks or work or do interviews or all the other stuff which I have to do in my life, sometimes, like yesterday afternoon, just in my room, there I was, just my breath and I, no interviews yesterday afternoon, I had a nice rest because I had a cold, and just, hey, we got free time. So let's hang out together. So my breath and I chilled out in my room. That's what it felt like. It wasn't like meditating. I've got to watch the breath, bro. In, go out, go in, go out. Don't you go anywhere, breath. In, out, yeah, I see you trying. In, out. No, it's just beautiful friendship. And of course, that's no effort at all. Just hanging out with a good old friend. And time just passes so easily. So now that is actually how we establish mindfulness. With some kindness, with some appreciation, with giving things importance. So, an exercise for that, if you're getting tired and bored on the first days of a retreat, we have this beautiful forest. Or we have Bodhinyana Monastery. I wasn't going to encourage you yesterday to go to Bodhinyana Monastery because there's a big wedding on there. And you know, you come here to get away from all that sort of stuff, all the noise and stuff. But anyway, today, tomorrow, the forest, go for a walk. Go for a walk, just being aware of the beauty of your surroundings. It's a very beautiful forest. There's many beautiful animals here. They're not dangerous animals. The kangaroos have never killed anybody in this monastery. They're all Buddha's kangaroos. So you can always go and find them. There's a cow here. The cow, Holly the cow. I don't know if anyone's seen it on this time because it was escaped prisoner from Carnet prison farm up the road. It escaped and sought sanctuary here. So it's here somewhere. A really big cow, apparently. I've never seen it. But anyway, it just hangs out in the grounds. So we give all sorts of things sanctuary. We did call the prison and tell them they're not really concerned. If it was a prisoner, maybe, but not sort of a cow. So it's having a wonderful time here. It's really smart cow. Go to any other place and it'd probably be on the chopping block somewhere, but here. She knows that you've got soft-hearted Buddhists here. So having a great old time, holding the cow. Anyway, so if you go for a walk in the forest, just be aware. Make mindfulness your priority and just enjoy. And it's a little metaphor for you. The mind wanders off. Does it really wander off? Or is for some reason you don't want to go with it? So be with it. Always be aware of where you are, what you're doing, and enjoy. Care for this moment. Even when it's unpleasant, care for it. Those monsters in the emperor's palace, then they get small and disappear eventually, just because you care for them. They're not a problem anymore. And you do your walking meditation, just walking. I will die, that's for sure. I didn't do that one here, did I yet? Oh, that's a really great one. Because just beforehand I was interviewed about death meditation. Sometimes death meditation, ooh, Ajahn Brahm, don't talk about death meditation. I like death meditation. When I was in UK recently, I went to see my brother. And on the way back from my brother's house, took the underground. I think I mentioned that story already, didn't I? The underground train. The underground train filled with zombies. Yeah. And that was the first time I didn't feel odd person out on the underground train dressed in my robes. Because I was accompanied by zombies and witches and vampires and a monk. Weird life. But anyway, that care for this moment. Give it importance. And then you are mindful, you're aware. And for the death meditation, it's not just zombies, they're fake. When you're doing the walking meditation, you might try this. It's, you know, it's quite interesting. And it just allows you, one, to be aware, mindful, and also to do a little bit what we call letting go. As you move your right foot, as it moves up and goes forward, you chant to yourself, I will die. Now, no one can argue about that. You know, you can argue about all sorts of things in life, but you know that is true. Not even Mr. Trump could say that's fake news. He knows he's going to die, everyone's going to die. So, I will die, your right foot. And as your left foot moves, that's for sure. I will die, that's for sure. Now, if you do that, that's what happens first of all. People start thinking it's a joke, a bit of fun. I will die, that's for sure. I will die, that's for sure. I will die, that's for sure. But you know it's absolutely true. You can't argue with that. So after a while, it actually gets the attention in this moment. I will die, that's for sure. It's important, you know it's important, so you don't have to put much effort giving importance to that. And then what happens? The next thing which you usually come to is fear. I will die, that's for sure. When? Ooh. So because of that, you get to fear. But carry on walking, I will die, that's for sure. And once you walk through the fear, not that long, you feel so free. I would know that's for sure. So all of your worries and concerns, they all disappear with your death. Isn't that wonderful? I would know that's for sure. You've got nowhere to go, nothing to achieve, nothing to hold on to. You're going to have to let go of everything eventually anyway, so why not let go of it now? And so you're just walking, just free. I will die. That's for sure. That's quite a relief, isn't it? No. For me it is. I will die, that's for sure. I don't want to have to give any more talks. No more meditation questions. No more counselling. No more figuring out fake Facebook accounts. I never heard about that before. No problems or worries at all. I will die, that's for sure. Oh, bliss, let go. I can always imagine my box right now. Bring it on. I was telling part of that, that there was this gentleman I read about, and a very wise person. He had some terminal disease, so, you know, he was about to die. And he decided to have his funeral before he died. It's a wonderful thing to do. Because I've been to so many funeral services, and it's only at your funeral service that all your friends and relations and colleagues come and say what a wonderful person you were. And at that time, it's too late for you. You're in the box. I think, what a waste. Wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if they could come and say what a wonderful person, how much you meant to them, and all the wonderful things you did in your life when you were alive and could actually hear it? So that's what this guy did. He had his box there and his coffin and had all the flowers and stuff, invited all his friends so that they came to his funeral when he still had a couple of days of life left so he could listen to all the wonderful things they said about him. And then he'd go, you know, into his death, you know, feeling really quite that he'd done a service. And he also, he said, that he could also see who really attended, so he had still had time to adjust his will. And, as I said, that was really a great example of thinking outside the box. You must have seen that one coming. But anyhow, so we're not afraid of these things. So I will die, that's for sure, I will die, that's for sure. It's almost like you let go before you have to die. So it's a beautiful little bit of meditation to do. But the whole point is getting that mindfulness up. And also you find if you are have joy and happiness, and I'm trying my best to get you to sort of laugh a little bit and have some joy, coming to a meditation retreat is not going to the dentist. Any dentists here, I do apologise, but you know, just not all dentists are. But this is something you look forward to. It is the Club Med Serpentine. It is a happy place. It is a place you look forward to. You look forward to coming and sitting here on your cushion and just meditating. Yes, time for myself, time just to chill out with my mind. Time actually to be here. Now is the most important time. I can't always be now because I have to travel such a long way just to come into the now from all overseas. Really crazy, isn't it? How much time do you have to spend to get into the now when it's always here? But anyway, you're here now in this little place, closing your eyes and just come into this present moment. Give that priority. Make this moment the most important in your whole world, in your whole life. And sometimes it's why people, when they have these terminal diseases, why it's so easy for them to meditate. Because you know, this is really important, this moment, right now. They haven't got many moments left. That's one of the other reasons why that death meditation can really say, okay, this is the most important thing to do. That precious stone, this rock of my own spiritual development, understanding, you know, who I am, you know, how I work, what is this life all about? That is really important, much more important than the economy or any election or anything else. So you really come into this moment and give it importance, which means you're willing to learn from anything. Even if it's something which you don't like, which is unpleasant, you're willing to learn from it, to allow it to be here long enough so you can understand why it's unpleasant, why you don't like this, why the mind keeps wandering off. When you're in this moment, give this moment importance. You don't try and change it, you care for it and allow it to release its secrets to you, as you do when you go walking in the forest. There's amazing things happen are in this forest. Things which even I haven't seen. And you go out there to explore. The exploration is not going to look for something. If you're looking for something, then you miss everything else which you weren't looking for, which are there out there. So you allow your mind to explore this place and just to see what's there. And little by little you'll find very little secrets, like the secret garden. There actually is a secret garden in this place. Is that Buddha statue still there?
I think so.
Is it in the secret garden? There's a secret garden somewhere here. Mm. I'm not going to tell you where it is. You know why? Because it's a secret. So explore, see if you can find it. And these are little things which make this moment very important, which means that eventually you really come into this present moment. You sit, you walk, you sleep, you eat your lunch, everything happens and you give it mindfulness. Once that mindfulness starts to get established, then when you start your formal meditation, like doing a body scan, you start to feel, hey, my knee feels a little bit tight. Why? So you feel it, understand it. An amazing thing with your body that sometimes you just need to look at it, and sometimes just even with your mind you can sort of adjust things and just to ease off the aches and the pains. amazing what the mind can do with a little bit of training. So I care for my knee, and now it feels good. So you learn a lot by being in this moment. Whatever's in front of you is the most important. And give it attention, give it value, and care for it. It's what I termed kindfulness. And kindfulness, you start with your body, and it brings tranquility to your body. If it's, I don't want to have this pain, call the doctor, give me a massage, get some painkiller, do something. No, like, you learn from your body. You learn so much from it. So I'm not afraid of pain, it's my teacher. Why Ajahn Chah used to say, sometimes I didn't know whether my teacher Ajahn Chah was a sadist or one of the kindest masters I've ever known. Sometimes it depends on what mood you were in. Because sometimes we had these mosquitoes were biting you. And these mosquitoes, not just one or two or three, 60 or 70. We count them on our arm. And with one of my other friends, and he actually is dead now, that friend, but not from mosquitoes. He disrobed and got married. That's what killed him. It was. Yeah, one year later he died. Anyway. Let that be for warning for you younger monks and nuns. But anyway, that we were in the jungle, they did have mosquito coils in the shop, but we weren't allowed to get any. They did have mosquito repellent in Bangkok, but we weren't allowed to get any. And we had to sit outside in the jungle, not in the rooms. And it was just mosquito heaven. They could eat us as much as they wanted. And, sometimes as a lay person, well, actually I tried this sometimes. You couldn't swat them, because that was breaking your precepts. What you could do, just nudge them. You know what they would do? You nudge them, they just go up and come down again and bite you again. It's a waste of time nudging them. I don't know about the mosquitoes which you've come across, but the mosquitoes in Thailand, they wouldn't just bite you. They go buzzing in your ear first of all, bzz, 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 bzz. Just to torture, I'm going to bite you. Bzz, 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 bzz. I'm coming, get ready. Bzz, 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 bzz. And so sometimes you're very compassionate. Very compassionate and just peaceful. So here we are, bite me. Come on, get it over with. And just when you let them, you just watch them and they just crawl in there and they find a place and they put their nose, very sort of, not painful, but not pleasant. They put their nose down there and say, okay, have a nice drink. You know what these mosquitoes would do? They'd retract their nose. They didn't like that place, so they'd go a bit further down. And they'd do another exploratory hole. They're three or four. They'd take advantage of my kindness. These mosquitoes. Come on, just this good enough, blood. Be grateful that I'm not going to swat you. It's so easy for me to do because I'm not going to do that. So, come on. So So we asked Ajahn Chah, can you help us? And he said, yeah, I can help you. From now on, he said, you call those mosquitoes Ajahn Mosquito. They are your teachers. Thank you. That's why with Ajahn Chah. But also, it was just so wise. So in the end, you just called them your teachers, understood them. And just understood that when you had all those mosquitoes on you, there's no choice. You had to just meditate properly. You go have a wandering mind. The mind wouldn't wander anywhere. It would just go, all those mosquitoes biting you. But so they focus your attention very easily. You focus your attention on just being here. The irritation, just care for it. And don't worry about it. That's the opposite of caring. Trying to cure it, trying to get rid of it or put some cream on or do something to get rid of those mosquitoes. That wasn't caring for it. That wasn't giving them importance. It was looking upon them as an irritation. You ever notice those hindrances, they're not actually things, they're the way we react to things. It's our emotional reactions of, you know, these wanting something or ill will or sloth and torpor or restlessness or doubt. It's not about the experience we're having, it's how we relate to it. And so when you allow those mosquitoes to be with kindness and to give them some of this attention, you're learning from it. It's Ajahn Mosquito, as Ajahn Chah said, so I had to give them respect and give the irritation respect and just be there. And what happens when you just allow it to be and you're not getting upset about it, you're not sort of tensing up about it, you relax. And you relax, relax, relax so much that you can't feel mosquito bites anymore. You go inside. And the weird part was that when I learned just from these, you know, 2-hour meditations, almost covered with mosquitoes at the beginning, that after I came out, there was no mosquito bites visible, no little welts, little red bumps, which you'd always get if you had a mosquito bite. And there wasn't there. And for years I thought, this is some of the psychic powers of samadhi, of stillness. It makes you invulnerable to mosquitoes. Like you have a power force around you. So mosquitoes, bzz, 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 they can't get in. And of course, it wasn't that at all. It took me years later coming to Australia, and I know the monks, we do get a new scientist and other articles every now and again. And one of the articles was saying that what attracts mosquitoes to you is mostly the carbon dioxide coming out of your pores. As in other words, the higher your metabolism, the more you're worried and thinking and anxious, the more carbon dioxide comes out, and you're actually putting an advertisement, a neon sign, hey mosquitoes, come over here, nice warm fresh blood. And that's because of the carbon dioxide coming out. But when you get into nice peaceful meditation, you're hardly metabolizing at all. Everything is so soft and peaceful that hardly any carbon dioxide is coming out, which meant that the mosquitoes couldn't find you. You'd actually vanished. And that was why, when I worried about the mosquitoes, when I was anxious about them, I got bit more. When I was so peaceful, so at ease, so relaxed, then I became more invisible to the mosquitoes. Thank you, Ajahn Mosquito. You taught me how not to worry, how to make peace, to care for the irritating feelings, rather than trying to get rid of them. So there's so much from that Emperor's Three Questions meditation, which we can do anytime, any place. And that establishes the mindfulness and the kindfulness. When the mindfulness and the kindfulness really get strong, meditating, as simple as having lunch. Do you all have trouble eating?
No.
I don't think so. Is it sort of hard to do? Difficult? Did anyone tell you how to do it? Maybe etiquette, but that's all. But it's natural. Eventually, with the kindfulness, meditation is just such a natural part of the human activity. Or rather, inactivity. Really learning how to rest. To relax to the max. So you're sitting here. You're not trying to make this another task, another thing to do, you know, to get sort of another achievement. Just like all the rest of the stuff we've done in our lives. You know, you get your high school certificates, get your bachelor's degree, get another degree and another degree. And get another certification, get your marriage license, get your driving license, advanced driving certificates, and I don't know, There's so many tests in our world. But this is not about tests and achievements. It's just about learning how to go in a totally different direction and just to be. Caring for this moment, kindfulness, empathy questions. So when you sit on the cushion, what are you going to aim for? We're talking about aiming for something. I'm just being here. This is the present moment. Now is the most important time. I'm not trying to get anywhere. I'm just being here. And being kind. Not trying to get anything, but learning. Learning from whatever's in front of me right now. And of course, there's no possibility of wandering mind, because you haven't got any goalposts. Wherever the mind goes, you're with it, just noticing it, giving this moment importance. If you think you're beyond your breath, you've got that, then of course the mind will wander off. But when this moment is your goalpost, it can't wander off. Because wherever I am, that's where I am. I'm always here. Doesn't matter, you may be travelling around the world. You're always here. So where is the lack of mindfulness? Sometimes lack of mindfulness, what people say is a wandering mind is, you're here, but you think you should be somewhere else. Wherever you are, be here. With that kindfulness and the awareness of wherever you are, soon many of those places where the mind tries to escape to are soon seen for what they are. They're just not an escape at all. And even if you do go there, after a while just the mind stays there and just becomes so peaceful and so free, it just disappears. And then the breath comes up. You know that I was going to say more about this today, but I'll probably have to do it later on. Why is the breath the most common form of meditation? And the reason is because it's when everything else disappears, that's what's left. On this example that first came here 36 years ago, and there was a gentleman who came to see Ajahn Chakro and I in Nolimara Center and said that he'd imported a flotation chamber into Perth, the first one in Western Australia. The flotation chamber was this little kind of box, and it was filled with salty water, which was at your same density as your body. So you just floated in it. And it was body temperature, like warm, not cold, not hot. So you floated and you could hardly feel it, apparently. And you could close the lid and there was no light in there at all, just light proof, so you couldn't see anything. And it was soundproof, so you couldn't hear anybody talking outside. And it obviously had some sort of ventilation in there somewhere because you didn't sort of suffocate. But it was trying to get all the senses to calm down, because there was nothing to impinge upon. Imagine, have you ever been, sometimes you're meditating, you've got a sore back, sore knee or something, and sometimes you can almost like dream and fantasize about being in a sensory deprivation chamber. Ajahn Brahm, can't we just, instead of having zafus, can't we have a sensory deprivation chamber, just like a nice little hot, salty, just the right temperature, room temperature, little box we can just put ourselves in, we just relax and meditate in there. So no aches, no pains, not cold, not hot, no noise. Oh, that'll be instant jhana. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Because when Ajahn Chakro went in there, I asked him, what was it like? You know, deep meditation. He said, the thing which I noticed was as soon as you couldn't see anything, couldn't hear anything, you know, there's no aches and pains on your body, what was really prominent was his breath. Because he couldn't stop his breathing inside that chamber. And because everything else was taken away, no other background noise, his breathing really stood out. And I thought, wow, that's an interesting little piece of Dhamma. That when everything else settles down, your breath is the only thing left moving. So in meditation, you're sitting here and the body starts to relax with kindness and starts to disappear. You can't feel it. You close your eyes, you can't see. Our ambient noise is okay, you know, bring the sound in the background of the aircon, but there's no sort of sudden cough or bang. So the sound disappears, the sight disappears, your body is relaxed. You know, smell and taste are just very easy to shut down. But then, what's left? Your breath. Which is one of the reasons why the breath meditation is the most natural. When everything else stops, even if you don't choose to do anything, you start to become aware of your breathing. And then that can take you even further. Because as you start breathing, or maybe I will do this the next time, how the breath itself starts to disappear. And that is where the fun really starts. But that is coming in a meditation hall close to you tomorrow. Very good. Okay. So any questions, you can put them on the piece of paper for tonight. But for now, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Ooh, hee hee hee. Very good.